Welcome, welcome to another episode of The Hunger Games. No, not really. You all know what this is. This is
it kind of felt like
Small Council Radio. Yeah, I know, right? So if you haven't seen the title already, we're going to be talking about the U.S. Nationals that just went down over the last weekend. And we have on with us today Cyrus, Craig, and Brett is going to be on in about 10 minutes, late as usual. But, you know, thank you guys for coming on.
Yeah,
no problem. I am very happy to be here.
Awesome. So took a lot of planning to try to get all this together, so we're going to jump right into it because a lot of people are kind of just doing this on their break. I'm pretty sure all four of us are. So we'll jump right into it. So we're going to start off with Cyrus, because I know you got a little less time than most of us. But, you know, we saw that you took third or fourth this weekend.
Fourth place, yep.
Awesome. And so before we jump into, like, your list and, like, who you played and all that, I just wanted to ask, what was the environment like, you know, being, like, one of the first, you know, 2021 tournaments in person? Like, you know, how was the environment for you? And, you know, not only, you know, the location, which a bunch of us have been to, but just the environment of the game system itself, how it's kind of developed.
The environment was great. Me and my buddy came up from Kansas City. It was about a 7.5-hour drive, and about an hour outside of town, we got an email that the tournament was going to be adjusted slightly because I think that the turnout wasn't going to be as high as they had expected for various reasons. But when we got there and we started meeting some of the people, some of the best dudes I think I've ever met in playing in any game system. And it sucks because I have little time today to talk about it. I could talk about this weekend for hours. I had a blast. I loved playing competitive 2021. Even though I faced two Night's Watch players, I brought a list specifically against the Night's Watch, so I felt like I had a decent shot. And just the whole weekend was great. I love getting back into a competitive environment like that.
Awesome. And so with a lot of the controversy around 2021, did you feel that you had less or more fun than, you know, the tournaments that you've done in 1.6? Or do you think the even though Night's Watch, you know, is Night's Watch, that, you know, the adjustments that CMON has done has kind of obviously been better for the, you know, the health of the game?
I think I had more fun myself, especially with Rob being there from organized play and him helping us through some of the questions that we had and some of the rulings. It was just great. And them even supporting the event with a huge just pile of prize support that they're wanting to get everybody back into the game with and sending out their back play packs. I think I probably had more fun this weekend than any other tournament that I've played in.
That's awesome. Yeah, I can't tell you how disappointed I was. I was looking forward to this one to kind of see, you know, the CMON staff and just kind of get back into the mix of things. So I guess, you know, without further ado, we can kind of jump into your two lists. And did you use each of them at least once?
On the main nationals tournament, I only used my first list. My second list was kind of a backup, matchup-dependent type list, but my primary one is the one that I stuck with for nationals.
Okay, and could you kind of run us through, like, your anti-Night's Watch list and what about it kind of helps you to get an edge over the Night's Watch?
Sure. So ever since we got the reveal for 2021 and I saw Roos Bolton, I'm looking at him, I'm saying he's the best Lannister commander, and he's not even a Lannister commander. So I focused in on him because I love his addition of control and panic heals and throwing out tokens, and his attachment is just screams Lannister with spread fear and an intimidating presence. So I put him in a unit of guardsmen. I had a naked unit of guardsmen, and then I had two cavalry to make up for the fact that I didn't have range and I wanted to be able to reach out and touch someone. I had flayed men and Knights of Casterly Rock, and I picked Tywin as one of the NCUs because he can absolutely neuter a Night's Watch unit by shutting off all of their abilities. You don't get any orders, and then his hits and panic can weaken a unit of conscripts down to potentially one rank and keep them from healing up the unit. And I followed that up with Peter because, you know, Peter, and Pycelle because I needed more tokens.
Nice. Yeah, I've, you know, Justin isn't on for this one, but Justin can definitely speak to the power of Roose, and Justin plays him in neutrals. You know, Roose and his ability to shut off abilities is so amazingly strong. I think people kind of underestimate it. That and neutral commanders aren't a lot of people's go-to when they're theory crafting with factions. So yeah, Roose is definitely, in my opinion, top tier, especially in the meta right now, because, you know, we don't have 1.6 Walder anymore. Before we jump into the rest of that, I forgot to mention one small thing is, I could be called out at any moment. If that happens, I'm going to probably just step away, and then I'll just let you guys kind of finish off the show. So that way we can still get the show, you know, over, you know, throughout the whole thing. That way I don't have to cut it short. Anyways, with that said, so kind of walk us through your day, you know, with your list and then your opponents.
Yeah, sure. So the first day was the Take the Black tournament, which Craig won. And I finished eighth on that day. I went 2-2. I tried to mix in my backup list, which was a Gregor list, and it didn't really work out so well for me. And I ended up playing Chris Tran in round two, and he trounced me, which, you know, which set me back, obviously. But I had a pretty good day one, and I went 2-2, and I thought, well, you know, this is probably a sign of how things are going to go. 2-2 is not bad, and I would have taken it. But I get to the second day, we got the Nationals tournament, and in round one, I play Matt Beattie, who is an awesome, awesome dude. He, tell you how awesome a dude was, he was voted for best sportsman and player's choice, and he got to take home one of the weapons that was made. He got Oathbreaker and got to take it home as the player's choice. Could not have possibly gone to a better dude. I played him twice over the weekend, and he was just awesome both times. The first time I played him was during the Take the Black tournament, and I got him. I got a major victory. It was like 13-4 or something, mostly because I ended up making 5 Gregor attacks in one round because it was free attack, overrun, assault orders, and then activation. And I needed every single one of them because he ran a Dragonstone Noble and Champions of the Stag with their massive armor. The only damage that I was doing was with Gregor's free wounds. That's the only damage I was doing, and I needed all 5 attacks to be able to kill those 2 units. But I got him in that one. In round one, I faced him again, and he almost had me. It was a really, really close game, but I was able to beat him out. And I think the primary reason is he is not the type of player to sit on an objective all game, which I can appreciate. I understand. He charged his Stannis unit into my Roost guardsman to try to knock me off a point, and he didn't get hardly any wounds through, took a Lannister supremacy, and took 7 wounds in return for attacking me. And that is that's exactly the point that turned the game around and allowed me to win round one. So, yeah, don't sleep on Lancer Guardsmen. We've been saying it all weekend. They're really good.
I was going to ask, so what made you decide to not run the Gregor since you had done so well, in particular just against him? Was it because you didn't think you were going to be able to pull that many attacks off all at the same time again?
Yeah, that was absolutely part of it. The other part of it was the game mode. We played Game of Thrones round one, and that's more of a get to the point and sit on it type objective. Also me and my buddy Kurt that I drove up with, I told him I wasn't really feeling the Gregor list that much. He's like, well, then don't run it. And I only brought to the tournament from Kansas City, I only brought what I planned on playing instead of bringing all of my stuff there. And I instantly regretted it because as soon as I got there, I was like, man, I really wish I could change some things in my list, but I can't because I only brought what I was going to run. So I was kicking myself for that. But, yeah, that's why I stuck with Roost in round one. And it was a close – it was only a standard victory. I think only beat him by, like, 3 points. But he could have had me in that one. But, yeah, that was round one. Round two, I end up having to face Chris Tran again, who trounced me in the first game with his Lannisters. But he ended up running Night's Watch, and I ended up feeling pretty comfortable because my list was, you know, supposed to help me against Night's Watch. Except for round two, the scenario was Here We Stand. Now, I got to say this. I don't really like Here We Stand. It caters to, unless you're going to go out and try to table your opponent, they're usually always close games. You're hardly ever going to get major victories out of it. And your units are always coming back, which I'm not a huge fan of. It's like your unit gets to come back every round. But that was a super close game. Chris Tran did not run an optimal Night's Watch list. He wanted to try out Vargo in a unit of Ranger Hunters. And he was going after my Roost Commander because that's the only attachment that I have on the list. So in order for him to get his value out of Vargo, he wants to try to take out Roost. And if he does, that drops 3 points of value that you have in a zone. So he was zeroing in on it. And I was able to do almost like a queen sacrifice type thing where I actually put Roost out there where he could get to him. And he charged in with his hunters and killed Roost. And this is in round six, and the score is like 9-8. He kills off Roost, and then he retreats back, but he's in position for my Knights of Casterly Rock to get to him. And I'm able to swing in my Knights of Casterly Rock into the flank of the hunters and wipe them out. And that ends up making it, instead of a 9-8 loss, it turned into an 11-9 victory at the end because I was able to take control of that zone and a couple other zones that totally swung me the game. It could have easily gone the other way. Chris Tran is a tremendous player. And I had to face him twice over the weekend, but he got me in the first time, and I was able to sneak out a victory the second time.
Nice.
That was round two. Round three, after, because doing all of the math and how many points do I have in the zone and this quadrant here and that quadrant there, my brain was about fried. And then I get to play John Hurley, who is another tremendous player. And he had the cojones to bring Starks, and he had a great Stark list. And he was the only one to play Starks. And I'm feeling okay about it, but it's also a Tully list, and I think I'm going to have a hard time getting through Tully Sworn Shields and Tully Cav, Rickon with Shaggy Dog. And I'm thinking, okay, this is, and Flayed Men. So he's got all of this armor and some pretty decent morale. I'm like, I'm going to have a hard time with this. But I had a plan. My opening gambit was to pop Tywin round two. And I gave the vulnerable and the hits to Shaggy Dog because I had marked him in Fire and Blood. So he would have been worth 3 points right off the bat. And even with the vulnerable, he ended up living with one wound remaining. So now Shaggy Dog is powered up, and I'm thinking, oh, crap, I lost this game. But John, rightly so, was playing really defensive with Shaggy because if he gets one more hit on him, that's going to be a pretty big swing. So he actually runs Shaggy Dog off to a corner of the table, and he's not really a major factor in most of the rest of the game. I'm on my back foot through most of the game, and it's another close one. If he gets a point, I get a point, and it's just back and forth. But there was a moment where I had marked his Tully Cavaliers, and I had turned them off with my Tywin ability. And I had a long bomb charge with Roost Guards. I need a 5 or a 6 to get into the flank, and they're marked by a couple points. And if I get the kill on the unit, that's going to be a 6-point swing because it's a marked unit killing a marked unit with 2 points on him. And I rolled a 6 when I needed a 5 or a 6. So I got super lucky there. I got into the flank of the Tully Cavaliers, and I'm able to kill him. 6 points go to me. John comes back, and it's the end of the. It's towards the end of the game, and I ended up winning on paper. I ended up winning the game by 1 point. John comes back, and we go to talk about it, and he very well may have shorted himself a point, and it may have ended on that round as a 10-10, with a potential of going to a round 6, but we turned in the sheet already, so we're not entirely sure if it should have gone another round or not. Probably it should have if he really shorted himself a point and we did the math. But I ended up winning a very close game against John Hurley, who was awesome. He ended up winning Best Painted Army and got to take home another one of the weapons that Seamon had made from Valyrian steel. He got to take home Needle. And then my last round, as we know, was against Brett and his Night's Watch. And after those two close games that we had, my brain was totally fried because this is now after 7 games in 2 days and 2 really close games against 2 really good players that could have gone either way, and then maybe I should have lost both of them. My reward is to play Brett at top table against his Night's Watch. And I had heard about his lists earlier in the day. He also didn't run the Night's Watch cancer of double crossbows and double conscripts. He did run one crossbow, but he had a curveball in there of a unit of flayed men. We start the game, and it was a pretty slow start, but he ran his flayed men up and tied up my flayed men in such a way that he could take pot shots at him with his crossbows. And I'm thinking, okay, these guys are screwed. And I made a mistake early on in deployment where it was Winds of Winter was the game mode, and I had Roost and guards off to the side to go sit on an objective. But in this game mode, you don't get any points for sitting on objectives. So Roost was way off to the side, and he was a non-factor until late into the game. So my flayed men are in trouble, and my dice were hot, Brett's were hot. I was making all kinds of saves. Neither of us failed a panic check until later in the game. It was just a brutal slugfest back and forth with just hot dice and making saves left to right. I think we get to round 3, and my flayed men are going to die, and that's going to free up his crossbows to turn and start taking out some of my other stuff. And that's when I see an opening. He had moved up his Othel conscripts towards the middle of the table, and my Knights of Casterly Rock were really close by. If I can get his conscripts, I play the mission where you get 2 additional points if you kill the enemy commander. If I can kill that unit and surge forth back out of range of his crossbows, then I can take the initiative, and now I can maybe dictate this battle more on my terms. So I made the gamble. I pushed all in on trying to kill this unit of conscripts, and I popped Tywin. I turned off all of his abilities so he doesn't get hardened and get free blocks. I give all the hits, and I give the panic check. The 4 hits go through, without needing the vulnerable token, which was great. So the vulnerable token's still on him. The panic check goes through and he passes. And I panic. I spend the panic token and he passes again. Like, damn it. So he's got 8 wounds left on this unit, but I'm going to charge the Knights of Casterly Rock and I make it. I get all 8 hits. He rolls his first set of defense dice. He fails 7, leaves 1 wound remaining. Great. I spend the vulnerable token. All he has to do is not roll a 6, and he rolls a 6. So Othel stays alive, and now we have the panic check, and he passes the panic check with boxcars. And at that moment, my soul died, because now my Knights of Casterly Rock are stuck in combat with his conscripts. They can't get out of range. And now his other conscript can start serving as a battery to refill it. And then, as expected, the flayed men died. His crossbows turned around and started firing at my knights. My defense dice were still hot. My knights probably survived longer than they should have. He killed Corrin to keep my unit of Lannister guards from being able to contest the crossbows to keep them from shooting in. And at that point in time, I'm like, yeah, I think I've lost this. But it ended up not being over yet. I finally got my Roost guards back into combat and started contesting his conscripts. And he shot into Roost's guards. And again, my dice were super hot. I think I only took 2 wounds from this shot, even though he was throwing 7, 8, 9 dice a shot at me every time he would shoot with his crossbows. And I launched a Lannister Supremacy back at him, and he ended up taking 6 wounds from a Lannister Supremacy on his crossbows. And that made him really concerned and a little bit more hesitant to keep shooting in with those. Because at that point in time, I had marked his crossbows for 2 additional points. And if he had lost them, then that would have either put me in the lead or tied us back up. But, you know, it ended up not going that way. A couple of his units were still alive. And all I had left at that point in time was Roost and guards. And I made the call to go ahead and retreat so I didn't take a major loss on the tabling. And at that point in time, we called it as a 6-4 victory to Brett. So, yeah, it was a slugfest back and forth. I made a gamble and lost on it. But I am still – I was happy to be there. I was happy to be in a position to play at top table. And I ended up going 3-1 on the night, taking 4th place. I think they had, like, they had to go to, like, a 4th tiebreaker or something to get everybody lined up for the final standings, but ended up being a great weekend. I couldn't be happier with how it went for me, unless, you know, I won that hammer, which would have been totally awesome, but that's okay. Brett can keep it. But, yeah, that's how it ended up going.
Nice. Yeah, it's funny, you know, as you're mentioning all that, you know, when I had played at the last event that Family Time had, I went 3-0 and then faced Brett last round in a secret mission, you know, I think it was Winds of Winter or Dark Wings, Dark Words, losing to then just my tiebreakers put me down to 4th place. It's just funny.
Yeah. That, yep. Very, very similar.
Yep. And, you know, he's just a big old cheater and, you know, since he's not here, I can say that.
he was brilliant. He's a great opponent. I think after the game was over, he gave me a big hug because I think he was relieved that he doesn't have to play into the Lannisters anymore. I think he was really concerned facing it because, like I said, I brought it specifically to counter the Night's Watch, and if I had been able to take advantage of that opening, I might have had him, but he's a great player. He had the perfect strategy because he tied up my flayed men right off the bat, and just pot shotted them. And that was absolutely the right move, and I didn't have an answer for it until that one moment. And it didn't work out, but I was thrilled over the weekend. I got to meet some great dudes, including Chris and Brett, who I've heard their content for months, and I finally got the opportunity to meet them. And Craig. Craig's okay. He's fine. I didn't get to play him, though.
You dodged a bullet.
Yeah, probably. Because I don't think, even though my Gregor list was kind of made to take on a little bit of Targs, I think he would have got steamrolled.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. You're a good player.
We'll get to it in a second, but Craig plays not a completely unorthodox, but a little unorthodox Targ list. So, but yeah, I know you only have a couple minutes left. So what would you say are... let's say your MVP for your Roost list and maybe an honorable mention, because I think I already know who your MVP is.
So it ended up being Tywin. He saved my bacon on more than one occasion by shutting off units and handing out his hits and panic. Like I said, I shut off Tully Cav to knock them down quite a bit. And I specifically brought him to shut down crossbows, but I used him in the game with Brett to shut down his conscripts to try to maximize my opportunity to try to kill them, but it just didn't work out. But if you're worried about Night's Watch crossbows in your area and you're a Lannister, bring Tywin, because he makes crossbows very, very sad. My honorable mention goes to Roose. Him and Lannister Guards, you already don't want to hit Lannister Guards, but he makes them where you almost have to ignore them. And that means they're only a 5-point unit that you feel like you have to ignore. Because if you hit them and you take a supremacy check, he's got Intimidating Presence for additional minus and additional wounds, and Spread Fear if you fail that, which is also likely, to spread it to another unit to make them take more panic. So I absolutely love Roose, but I'm probably going to take a break and play some other things, because I've played Roose Lannister exclusively for the past month or so, and then 8 games over the last 2 days over the weekend. So
yep.
he's gonna go back on the shelf for a minute, but I absolutely love him. I think he's getting overlooked a little bit. He's great.
And that kind of goes back to one episode we talked about where, for your commander, I think key units to put your commander in now that commanders give you extra points for being on objectives is you either want to put it in one of the cheapest things possible and just sit on an objective for an investment of 5, maybe 6 points that's super defensive that your opponent isn't going to want to attack, or you put it in something that can aggressively go off and take an objective more further into the field, either whether it be like the center objective or an objective over on your opponent's side. The last thing you want to do is, put your commander in this, 7-8 point investment bunker that can't really put out any damage, because now it's a lot easier for your opponent to just go, oh, all right, I'll ignore that thing. I know it's giving you extra points, but that's a lot of investment. You had to go do that. But like you said, a 5-point guardsman.
Yeah, or putting your commander in a purely offensive unit with no defense. Like, I love Gregor and Pyromancers, but they get blown away by a stiff breeze. It's hard to justify, especially when you need to hold a point, if they can just charge in and knock the whole thing out. So I think a good balance, especially in a cheap defensive unit like that, that can also do damage, unorthodox damage, but it's still damage, is the right way to go. But I do have to go here. Thanks for letting me ramble. I really appreciate it. Had a great time.
Yeah, of course.
So I will catch you guys later.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. All right. So, with that said, we'll jump right over to you, Craig, because I know you have roughly about as much time as he did. And, you know, I'll just start off by kind of asking the same questions. You know, I know you've played in a ton of in-person tournaments, you know, in 1.6 and even before that. What's your kind of opinion about the 2021, you know, environment, whether it be just the game system itself or, you know, just the environment of the people?
As far as the people goes, it hasn't changed. They were great people before. They're great people now, Cyrus being one of them. However, as far as the changes to the game modes and units and all that, it took me a little bit of time to adjust, and I was a huge fan of 1.6. You know, I loved my Krannig Men and ran them almost exclusively. And once that went away, I was a little bit sad. But fortunately, they provided me with Targaryen Outriders that do the same thing but better. But overall, I think it is a better game system in that before it was just who can Alpha Strike the other guy faster. And now I think, I mean, maneuvering and everything was always super important. But now I think it's even more important because games turn into a grind really quickly where they wouldn't before.
Yeah, I think, you know, you can definitely still, like, 1-2 punch things to death, but it's a lot more rare, like, a lot more rare, and it usually has to be, like, a mismatch. You know, you can't just have, like, anything, you know, 1-2 shot anything anymore with, you know, ease. Now you kind of have to have, like, an awesome combo of, like, an attachment in something usually against something a lot more weaker with, like, no support. I think the game is definitely on the right track. Some people have kind of complained over, you know, about some of our, you know, reviews of the new stuff, you know. And I want to just say on the overall of 2021, I think it is better than 1.6. In my opinion, there's a lot of things that could be, you know, changed, and everyone kind of has their own opinions on that. But personally, I think to make the game about as perfect as it could be, the list is, like, you know, in the single digits across everything. That if you change those things, you know, the game would, you know, there'd be almost no complaining outside of, you know, the normal stuff people like to complain about. So, but yeah, I agree. From my experience, the game has just become that much more better.
I think it highlights skill more.
Yeah, agreed. It definitely takes a lot more thinking, which is, you know, brain racking because the game already required so much thinking before. Go ahead and take us through your day one. Did your list change at all between day one and two?
No, it didn't. Before I get into my list, I want to say that there were a couple guys here who went above and beyond to help me get the practice games I needed and to settle on a list and to make sure that I could get that list painted in time and everything. Ryan Mulkey and Jake Greenwalt went out of their way, and I really appreciate them for that. But to the list. So it was Drogo and Flayedmen. Naked Screamers, by naked I mean no attachments, no attachments and Outriders, another unit of no attachment Outriders, a unit of Hakars, if I'm saying that correctly, and Ilario, and Selmy as my two NCUs. And I believe that's the controversial part, is the two NCUs. I've been getting a lot of questions since then. Well, how does two NCUs work? Why didn't you run three? Did you struggle against three? And my answer has been to all of them that in this particular list, with this particular faction, I feel like three NCUs is a point drain. So I have five combat units on the table. They're all incredibly fast. They all have decent damage output, some higher, some lower, but very good damage output across the board. They all have incredibly high morale to deal with Night's Watch. But they have the same armor as paper. I mean, it's useless. If they get hit, they're taking wounds. So if you only have four units that if they get hit, they're taking wounds, you're in trouble. In addition to that, my tactics deck does not require me to hold any particular zone. You can make the argument that there are two cards that require the horse. However, with the way my list is built, I never really needed that secondary effect. A 2-inch shift for me with my speed is just as good as a 3-inch free maneuver because I have a free maneuver anyway. And I usually didn't need that 3-inch. So I wasn't beholden to any zones on the tactics board with the exception of outflank. So because of that, I could use my NCUs more defensively. So I could take the zones that you needed. And to me, a third one just would have been a waste. When I was playing people with three NCUs, I would get a little bit excited in that they're all good NCUs. They're all good opponents. They're all good lists. But the way I play the game with that list, that meant there were four or five less points on the table to counter me. And the way I play the list is I shoot off to both table edges. I try to get to my opponent's table edge. I essentially try to attack from all four sides. I keep moving. I get the enemy to pivot into awkward positions, and then I hit flanks. And I'll try to hit with two units or whatever. But if they're missing those four or five points on the table, and they're already significantly slower than me, for example, if they're running an infantry army, then they're really going to struggle to be able to counter what I'm doing on the table. So that's why I went two NCUs and why I prefer two NCUs in this version. Hrakars,
yeah.
I think. Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, I definitely agree. Certain lists and certain factions, it's hard to completely blanket a whole faction, but I would say, let's just say the rule and not, like, the exceptions. But I think certain lists just benefit, or even certain factions just benefit from one or the other. For example, I think I've mentioned it once before, for me personally, I feel like free folk want two NCUs. They just benefit way more for having the extra points on the field. But I would say Greyjoys, who are very similar in the sense that they're kind of horde-like, in the countless games I've played at this point, with them being my favorite faction, I would say I always easily do the best when they have three NCUs. They just benefit way more from the tactics board. So, and it also comes down to play style, and individual lists can change that rule. But yeah, I think you make great points with your list of why two NCUs just make sense. But go ahead.
Yeah. So something else I got questioned about going into the tournament when I was talking to people about lists was Hrakars. And you see a lot of people saying, and they're not incorrect, they're actually right about this, outflank is a trap. If you outflank your own unit, you're playing 5 points down. And if they can block you from getting the horse, then you're really screwed. However, I'm not too smart, and I did it anyway quite often. And what would happen was I'd make sure that I was going to be going second when that happened. And I would drop them in as close behind their commander or whatever threat they had as possible. And I would use them like a missile. I would just go in and try to either tie up that massive threat or try to alpha strike something with them. And it became so critical to the way my games went that I think without that outflank and without the Hrakars, I may have been 500 on the weekend as opposed to 7-1. And then I used Screamers in a way. So almost every list I saw had Flaydmen or some other form of heavy cavalry. But with the exception of two lists, two opponents, they only had one. So what I would do is hunt them with Screamers. So I would just charge them with Screamers. And with the high morale of the Screamers, it's going to take a few turns to cut through them. By the time that happens, I'm hoping that I have already done enough damage across the rest of the table that the game's already over. So I would use the Screamers to suicide charge into their heavy cavalry to tie them up to allow me the freedom to do essentially whatever I wanted. That's pretty much how I ran the list, and I tried to alpha strike with Drogo and Vladimir. But that one's kind of self-explanatory.
Yeah, who would ever do that combo? That one's just horrible. So
I almost didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I have plenty of lists where he's just in screamers just because save the points, and he's still super, you know, scary even in screamers. So, yeah, so go ahead and take us through, I guess, day one, where you, I believe you took first, right? 4-0?
Yes. Yep, 4-0. I started out against a High Sparrow list, and it was Feast for Crows. And he had his, during deployment, he put his Blademen, which was his only cavalry unit and really the only threat to catch me, behind his army in fear of my outflank Heraklers, which was the whole point of using them. So now the only unit that can catch me is essentially out of fight, and I haven't even started the game yet. So I put the Heraklers in outflank, and I advanced up the table. Drogo was lined up head up on his commander, and they were both marching towards one of the objectives. He decided with his warrior sons and commander to alpha strike me, alpha strike Drogo. He needed a 2+ on his charge. Poor guy rolled a 1. So he stopped an inch in front of Drogo and landed on the token on top of the corpse pile. So I felt a little bad about that one. And then I dropped in Heraklers behind him, which he had deployed the flayed men in such a way that he should have been able to counter them. But at that point in the game where his units were sitting, he couldn't fit his flayed men in there to counter them, to charge me. So his whole army kind of got messed up. He had to turn units to try to face me. And at that point, that's pretty much how that game went. I believe it was a crushing. I don't remember the score because there were a lot of games and they all kind of blended together. Game two, I played a Baratheon player. I believe the same one Cyrus mentioned, the really cool guy that won Player's Choice. And it was a bit of a grind. I was sitting right next to Cyrus and Chris Tran while they were playing their game, and I was very actively rooting and loudly rooting for Cyrus to beat Chris because I didn't want anything to do with Chris, I'll be honest. I've gotten lucky against him before and wasn't sure I'd be able to do it again. So I was
kind of
watching
both games.
You mean as far
as playing him in the next round?
Yep, yeah. Yeah, okay. I didn't want to play him the next round. So
those dirty Sunday slaughter guys. We love you guys. But, so, yeah.
Yeah, we do.
Go ahead.
The Baratheon game was really a – he bogged me down, which is what Baratheons do, and it's the one thing that I don't ever want to happen to me. But the dice went my way, and he went from having me locked up and a tie game to 4 activations later, he was missing 3 units. And it wasn't entirely, I'm not gonna say it was superior play on my part. It's just the way it went, you know, the dice and overrun and everything else. So I would like
sure
to point out that he charged a Dragonstone Noble over stakes to come kill me. And I was shocked. Thing was, the way his other tray was sitting, he couldn't see the stakes. He forgot they were there. And I picked up the D3 to roll, and I was like, before I do this, are you sure? Are you sure you really want to charge over the stakes? And he thought about it for a second. He's like, yeah, I do. Okay. And then I rolled a 1. And that attack hurt. So props to him for having the guts to do that, because I wouldn't have had the guts to do that. But that game ended, and I very unfortunately drew Chris Tran for the next game. And that was Dark Wings, Dark Words, which I think is why the game went the way it did. So all of the objective cards we were pulling were all beneficial to me, because he had 3 NCUs. He was running Lannisters. I had 2. And they all had to do with taking certain zones on the board or getting to certain places on the table, like getting to the center objective and holding it or, you know, whatever. So he, and rightfully so, decided that he needed to cycle those cards out. But what happened when he cycled those cards out is he would replace them with worse cards, like score 2 points for being in your enemy's deployment zone, which is where I play anyway. So he just got really unlucky on the card draw. And he charged, he hid, Hywin was his commander, and he hid him from Drogo. You know, he out-activated me, so he was able to deploy him opposite corner, and then he put a unit in front of him. He was not letting me get to Tywin. So he charged my Outriders past the token on that side of the field, and his intent was to march up, and since my Outriders could no longer get to him, hold that token to score a bunch of points. But I had ride-by attack, so when he did that, I just rode through his unit that charged me and sat myself down on his token anyway. And prevented him from getting it for a couple rounds, which ended up being the difference. As far as the game was a lot closer than what the score would suggest. It ended up being a crushing by like 1 point. I think it was 12-7, but it was a lot closer than that. He just had some bad luck on the objective cards, and that's just the way it goes, I guess. So, but that was a heck of a good game. Then I had to play John Hurley, which, you know, as has already been talked about, is a Stark player and a very, very good one. And his list gave me fits because he had two flayed men, a wolf, or no, I'm sorry, one flayed men, a wolf, and cavaliers, and then Tully and shields. It was Clash of Kings, I believe. Yeah, Clash of Kings, and I was able to snipe with Drogo, his commander, which was huge. I did it on, like, turn two. But the way my list works, a good parameter for me for success is since I want to get my opponent off objectives, I want to get him spinning, trying to chase me, you know, whatever. A good parameter of success is I'm playing the majority of the game on my opponent's half of the table because that tells me I'm behind them, I'm in their flank. They're doing what I want them to do now and just trying to survive instead of trying to score. So that's how I judge how well my game's going. Well, against all his cavalry, the entire game was happening on my side of the table, and I ran out of room to flee quickly. So it was a bit of a problem. That game actually ended up being really close. I pulled it out in the end just by tying up his cavalry and trying to prevent them from wiping me off the table. And I think the final score there was 10-7, but it was a good game and well played on his part. And that got me my fourth win, 4-0. That was
nice.
Day one.
Yeah, definitely a hard group of players, you know, to get through. You know, I've played John Hurley at pretty much every time I go to Family Time games other than maybe one of them. And it's always, you know, a back and forth. So you took first. What was the prizing like for day one?
It was significant. I think day one I ended up with a Hand of the King, a Greyjoy starter, like 6 unit boxes, and long call with a plaque that
nice.
Said champion of that tournament. So, I mean, I did not leave empty-handed. we'll put it there.
Well, you know, if you had a sheath, you could, you know, could have left empty-handed. So, how was your second day then?
Oh, I don't want to talk about that. I'm still bitter. No, it was actually rough. So my first match was Chris Bloom, who's a fantastic player in his own right, and he had Mother of Dragons, and it was Game of Thrones scenario, which Mother of Dragons is a fantastic counter to my list. A Game of Thrones scenario is the absolute worst scenario for my list. And top it all off, it was being ran by a great player. So I was a little nervous going into it, but it's like, it's all right. I came up with a plan. It's going to work. And it did, actually, believe it or not. I had all 3 of his dragons charge me, but they had to do it in such a way that they're all spread out from each other, so they could not support each other. And then I had 2 of them deathly wounded. I had one with, I had put 5 wounds on it, The other one I had 6 wounds on. I'm like, all right, let's go. Now I'm going to win this game. So I run the Hrakars up. I'm like, okay, I'm going to charge you in the flank with the Hrakars, and I'm going to put Sundering on them. So I'm going to have 6 dice with Vicious. You've got 2 wounds left. You're saving on 6s. You're going to die. Then I'm going to have my Screamers turn around and kill your other dragon from the rear. And then I'm going to wipe you off the table. Instead, I successfully charged with those 6 dice. With rerolls, I had a total of 3 hits. And Chris decides that it's in his best interest to roll 2 sixes, only taking 1 wound, and then passing his panic test.
Oy.
And then, yeah, and then he killed my Hrakars. So, and then it was all downhill from there. And I never recovered from that. So hats off to him. I mean, he didn't let me recover from that. So it was a good game, but it hurt my heart. It ended up being – it was my first crushing loss in probably a couple of years, 10-3, and I'm still not over it. But from there, you know, I'm thinking, well, I won yesterday, so I need to have a good showing today just to substantiate what I did yesterday. And I came out and got crushed. So I need to win. But if I want to place high, I can't just win. I have to crush people. So now, instead of just trying to win, which is hard enough in this game against these types of players, I'm trying to blow them off the table. But I got really lucky with scenarios. So the next scenario is Here We Stand. Thyrish mentioned not being a fan of that one. Personally, it's my favorite one as a Dothraki player, because all I have to do is move. I can go to any zone on the table I want with any unit I want at any time that I want and outscore you that way. So that's what I did, and ended up getting a crushing victory there. And the next game was against Greyjoys, and I think that was Sean. And I got lucky again. Things did not go his way. So a way I play my tactics deck, I've got Avdravad in the deck, and I have Lead by Example. They're both decent cards. They're both good cards. But the second effect on the card is start of a friendly turn, discard this card, draw another card. And that's what I used it for. So I was constantly cycling and tutoring my deck, so I constantly had a handful of cards I liked. Well, in this game against Sean, I drew 2 of them. And Blood of the Dragon? Yeah, Blood of the Dragon, that's the one. So I play Blood of the Dragon on Drogo. Then I play those other two cards to get 2 more cards. I had also taken the envelope, which drew me another Blood of the Dragon and another Avdravad, so I cycled again. So basically, at this point, I've already played 5 cards, and I have 3 in my hand, and we're only halfway through round 1. 2 of the 3 in my hand were Overrun and the free attack card. I'm drawing a blank on the name right now for whatever reason. But the free charge card from Drogo, which is Assault Orders. Assault Orders is the name of the card. I don't know why I drew a blank on that. So I'm looking at it, and I'm like, okay. And it was Fire and Blood scenario, so it was all about killing. And like, well, I'll activate Drogo. If I connect on the charge here, it's on a 6. You know, great. If I connect, great. I shouldn't connect, but if I do, great. If I don't, then I'll just play Assault Orders and keep on moving. I rolled a 6, charged his Reavers, blew them up, which I think was a 1-shot. No, I blew them up. They had 2 wounds left, something like that. I then played Assault Orders, attacked again, killed the unit, played Overrun, and then 1-shot his Greyjoy Archers. So at the end of round 1, he was already down 2 units, and I was halfway through my tactics deck. So it didn't, you know, and he played well. He actually recovered from it and made it a close game for a while. So hats off to him for being a good player for that, but it was just bad luck for him to start the game. And I'm looking at the score like, well, I have to get a crushing here, otherwise I lose the tiebreakers. Like you said, you lose a game, you drop several places. So I actually delayed my last attack by a round so I could put an extra attack or an extra VP on his unit to get that crushing. So I did that. Won that game. And the next game was once again final game of the day, John Hurley. And like, I don't know how many times I got to play this guy. Great player, but man. And once again, he took it down to the wire. It was another 2 or 3 victory point game. I don't even remember what the scenario was. Oh, Winds of Winter. And we both drew the same objective cards that we were using. We actually played them simultaneously throughout most of the game. So that was a good back-and-forth game. He had units in my deployment. I had units in his deployment. Neither one of us had more than 2 units left at the end of the game. So it was a tight one. I ended up winning that one 10-7, 10-8, something like that. So that was a good game too. And I think I ended up finishing in third on day 2.
Nice. Yeah, and you know, it's like I think you mentioned in a post, you know, going 7-1 over 2 days is a big deal. You know, I know this was forever ago and I mentioned it once in a blue moon, but you know, I can't wait for Adepticon to come back and, you know, do what I did in 2019, you know, in four days straight of 4 tournaments, you know, because for me, like a gauntlet like that, I mean, it was, you know, it's crazy enough just doing one day of 4 or 5 games, and then especially a second day of 4 games, you know, the more you play, I mean, the more, you know, it just hurts your brain, you know, especially now, as we mentioned just before you started, that, you know, this game is, there's a lot more to it now in 2021. It's a lot more decision-making. So,
I still have not recovered, you know, for the record.
Yeah. Because for Adepticon, I was so itching to play as much as I could back then because, you know, I hadn't played in a big event. I hadn't played in anything bigger than, I think, 6 people before 2019 Adepticon. So I was like, you know what, I signed up for the beginner tournament because, you know, people have different opinions on what beginner tournament is. That could be, you know, you've never played before beginner, or that can mean you've never played in a major event, or it can mean it's your first major event. I mean, there's a lot of different opinions on that. So I signed up because I had never done anything past 6 people. Then I signed up for the 2 qualifiers that one was on Thursday, and the 2 qualifiers on Friday, Saturday, and then the finals, which I qualified for twice. On both days, you know, so 7-1 is a big deal. You know, it's not easy when you play a game. There's so many different types of games out there, and it's always hard to, you know, plan for everything and make lists that can cover everything and, you know, take all the curveballs that can be thrown at you. So, you know, like I said, 7-1 is awesome, especially, you know, anytime you go to multiple events in a row and you can say you took like 3rd place or higher in all of them, or in this case, both of them, I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, definitely. It was a lot of fun and very taxing.
So before we jump, because I know you got to get going, and before we jump over to Brett, who's been patiently waiting in the corner where we left him, what would you say is your MVP for your list and your honorable mention MVP?
My MVP has to be the Hurricars. They died every game, but they died for the cause. They usually blew something up or stalled the game enough that gave me the edge I needed. And then secondly would be Drogo and Flavemen, because he did all the heavy lifting as far as go kill this, go kill that, you know. So I don't win without either of those pieces.
Now, did you have a single game where Drogo and the Flavemen actually died, or because I don't remember you had mentioned that or not?
Yes, I had one single game where they died, and you can probably guess which one it is.
Okay, yeah.
It was
the only loss.
Dragon game that I lost. Yes.
So we'll put it that way. If Drogo and Flayed Men die, it's not looking good.
Right.
All right,
most
and then very
wound.
Last. Oh, yeah? Man. Yeah. So with that said, very last thing I wanted to ask. So what was, like, the highlight of the whole weekend for you? Just, like, any one particular thing that happened?
Oh, that's a tough one. Honestly, it was – I'd say the highlight would be just hanging out with people, you know, in between games, before the games. A lot of joking around with Brett and Chris and stuff like that. Just enjoying the community that this game has.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. You know, anyone listening that is anywhere near Family Time Games, whenever they do a major event, I know sometimes it can be a little on the lower side, you know, like this one was 16. Sometimes it could be upwards of, you know, like 30, you know, but if you're thinking about taking a little bit of a drive, this is definitely one of the locations to do it at. I mean, me and Justin drive out from just west of Chicago. Craig from a little further than that west, and then you have Cyrus driving. You got the people from Ohio driving. I mean, the place is great, and it's always an amazing time. So definitely, if you've ever been kind of on the fence about it, try it at least once. It's definitely worth the trip, and they have lots of great food and lots of great places to get a hotel at or whatnot, and definitely make it within the affordable limits. But I know you got to get going, Craig. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing you know, your experience.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
Yeah, of course. All right, Brett, come on. Get over here. Well, you don't feel like talking?
I'm here. I'm sorry I accidentally made a phone call.
Oh, okay. All right. So Brett took first again. He went 4-0 on Sunday. I know you had some personal stuff that you had on Saturday, which is why you're unfortunately unable to attend that day. So kind of same like I asked Cyrus and Craig, what's your opinion on 2021 versus 1.6 as far as like the environment of the tournaments and just whether it be the people or just the game experience itself?
So you asked like the general atmosphere?
Yeah, like is it a lot more fun, frustrating? Because I know there's been a lot of controversy around things being way too powerful, and we're talking about in this time of year with everything going on, a major event, even regardless the attendance with no restrictions, you know, so you had the full brunt of anything anyone could bring. So what was your kind of experience with, you know, 2021, and just whether it was fun or frustrating or just more tactical, just anything that you kind of felt compared to 1.6?
No, I think 2021 is you can point fingers and you can say like, hey, this is really powerful, yada, yada, yada. I think we've had some conversations on Small Council, and I've had this conversation on other podcasts as well, but another issue is that yet meta is still very young. So some of the things that were initially, you know, interpreted as, hey, this is way too powerful, i.e. Lannister Supremacy, never really found its footing. And it's, I mean, Cyrus ran it, and, I mean, he busted my butt with it. But it's just not like this super meta-y kind of build. And, you know, of course there's things that are really strong, but if you're comparing it to 1.6, I think the developers and the game in general have taken not just a step, but like a massive stride in the right direction. I think the game is in actually a pretty good place. There are very few exceptions. This is good because I think that overall it's way more balanced, way more fun, and the games are way closer. than even what they were in 1.6, and I thought 1.6 was pretty good and just had a couple of outliers. But I think just in general, the idea is they're moving very quickly in the right direction, and we're so close to having, like, an actual perfect game. But another part of that is perception, you know. No matter how balanced they ever make the game, you know, somebody's going to say, well, this is turbo broken, and, like, people aren't going to agree with them. And so a lot of that is player perception as to what they view as overpowered. That's more like your local meta or the meta that you're playing with on time, whether that's online or your local people, you know. In a meta where, you know, maybe people aren't taking Night's Watch, they might think that Free Folk are just ridiculously overpowered. Or in another meta where people play Free Folk and Greyjoys, you know, kind of low morale armies, they might think Lannisters and Melisandre are just ridiculously overpowered. So it's a really tough question to answer when you ask, like, well, what's broken? Because it's really is about interpretation, and everything has some counter somewhere. So if you're playing with and against those counters, then the stuff that's perceived as broken everywhere else might not be so bad. So I guess that's a long way of answering the question. I think everybody had a really good time. I don't think people, even the guys that took like a crushing, I don't think they felt helpless. I think that's just the nature of kind of 2021 games where things can just kind of steamroll. But a lot of that comes back to list balance and list design. You know, if you've built your list to feather out activations, say three poor fellows for Lannister, you've got one unit of Warrior Sons with your commander, and you've got a unit of Flayed Men. I mean, obviously, you're banking on using those activations to get the leverage and get your Flayed Men in position. Well, if your Flayed Men happen to get blown up by something, it's probably a downhill game after that. But that doesn't mean that what you played was horribly unbalanced. It just means that your list was kind of designed around that tempo, and maybe it just didn't work out for you. Maybe you got log-jammed into a combat that you thought you were going to win, and it didn't work out, and then as a result, you were stuck. These things can just happen anyway. So I think the game's in a good place. I think it's really fair. I think everybody who was there had a really good time. The spirit was really, really high. Robert Fulkerson and Adam Lavelle were there, and they were having a super good time. Everybody was joking around. You know, there was the occasional shouting and yelling, but not like a bad shout or a yell, like, oh, boom, kind of shout and yell. It was a really, really positive environment. It's my first in-person event since,
Since our last 1.6.
Yeah, since ours, yep. So when was that? Was that Gen Con replacement for last year?
Maybe Adepticon early this year.
Oh, duh. Yeah, I'm silly. Yeah, so it's been like 5 months then, 4 or 5 months. So it was really nice for me to get, I think it's probably 5 or 6 months really, but it's been really nice to get back into playing in person. I'm rallying the local guys. We're doing a league. We got Gary playing again. We've got Sean playing. We've got John Cash getting ready to get back in as soon as the card packs come out. And so it's looking pretty good in Indy for in-person play. So hopefully the next event there's, you know, 10 or 11 guys just from Indy, and that'll really help to bolster the numbers of those tournaments.
Well, I definitely will be there, especially after I feel so disappointed because I had like 4 major events in person that I was supposed to attend, and because I'm going to be here through the month. I missed the Ohio one. I missed the Nationals. I'm going to miss Gen Con. I do have one in October that there's almost should be no reason why I should miss that one, so I'm super excited for that one. But if you guys hold another one, you know, late next month or early, like, November or something, I'll definitely be there, and I'll try to get a bunch of the Illinois guys to come with. But from what you said,
well,
I definitely have
Robert.
Go ahead.
Robert said Akon 2022 is a thing. He said, like, I mean, he stomped his foot down and said it's happening. And I know Marty was planning some primers for that. So those will be some really cool events to get out to, and hopefully I'll run into you there. I haven't even kind of decided what I would run for Adepticon. So I mean, you never know. They might drop a new faction on us before then.
Yeah, it might be an uphill battle, but my paint job is turning out, like, I'm in love with my paint job for my Greyjoys, so it might be an uphill battle, but I think I'm just going to start sticking with Greyjoys at a bunch of events and see, challenge myself and see how well I can do. Not because Greyjoys are weak, but, you know, they're definitely not, like, top tier, if that makes any sense. They're, like, B+, A-.
Greyjoys definitely have the tools to beat the two top dogs right now, which is really interesting because they can struggle a little bit against some of the others. Like, Greyjoys are in the middle of the pack there with Lannisters and Free Folk and Baratheons. They're kind of all in and around the same place. And then you've got the debate about Night's Watch or Targaryens at the top. But honestly, Greyjoys have good play into Targaryens and into Night's Watch, particularly
dragons.
With dragons. If you...
Yeah.
If you manage to get what is dead may never die, and a dragon ends up getting stuck in combat with something that it doesn't really want to be stuck in, or it exposes its rear or its flank to something else, the Greyjoys definitely have ways of wiping those out. I mean, even archers in the rear is probably putting 4 or 5 wounds on a dragon, 6 if the dragon's unfortunate. So there's definitely some play there against those top dogs for sure.
Yeah, and to kind of, you know, mention or to go off of what you were mentioning about, you know, the play experience, you know, I was there, but just from what I haven't seen a single bad thing said about the U.S. National. So, and, you know, it seems like everyone had an amazing time and not a single complaint of the meta. Or, you know, what was seen there. And we saw a little bit of everything we saw between both days. You know, we saw the Targaryens, you know, doing their dragon stuff, the Dothraki stuff. We saw the Night's Watch doing their stuff and Lannisters doing their stuff. You know, and those were considered to be, like, the three top dogs of, you know, 2021 for what little time we've had with it so far. So... And I haven't seen any, like, major complaints. Now, like you said, we'll see how the meta develops once we can get more tournaments in, and it'll be interesting to see. You know, with that said, tell us kind of about how your day went on Sunday.
Sure. I chose to go in with Night's Watch. This was a decision. I think some people might remember that I cleared out almost all of my Song of Ice and Fire armies. And I think that some people were speculating that maybe I was getting out of the game, which obviously was not the case. This is a case of happy wife, happy life kind of thing. And we just moved, and she hadn't been in the attic at our house for a long time. And so we were moving, and she went up there to get some of her stuff, and she went into the attic. And, I mean, I'm not even exaggerating. I'll bet I had $8,000 to $10,000 worth of miniatures up there between Warhammer and Song of Ice and Fire. I literally had Song of Ice and Fire starter boxes that hadn't been opened. I had unit boxes to accompany those that hadn't been opened. And most of this was not prize support because, as you know from playing with me, generally the prize support, if it's like unit boxes or starter boxes, I just give it away. You know, I play to have fun, and I play to build the community, not to get prizes. So this is all stuff I'd purchased or traded for or acquired, but then I had a bunch of, like, really rare Warhammer stuff that, like, is out of print, like a whole bunch of Forge World models, like the Forge World Chaos Dragon, and I had all of this stuff, like, in boxes. They're unopened, unassembled, and she just went up there, and she was like, no, we're not doing this. She's like, you paint so slow, you're never going to paint all of this. Why do you have all of this? She was like, just cut it down to one Warhammer army, two a Song of Ice and Fire armies. So I chose to keep the Lannisters. I kept the Night's Watch. And then I sold all of the Warhammer but my Lizardmen. And then in the process of doing that, I really, really, really wanted to repaint my Lannisters. And I didn't want to repaint the ones I already painted. So I shipped those off to Kevin McReynolds, who's a supporter of the show. And... So I didn't have any painted Lannisters, and I didn't even have a full Lannister army. So the only thing I had really to play with was Night's Watch, and I wanted to do something different with them. I've had those flayed men painted and converted. I played them a lot in 1.6 before the last flayed men patch. And I was like, man, I really want to bring the flayed men out. So I went ahead and went with Night's Watch. I didn't do double watch captain in either list. No double crossbows or anything like that. But I did play some kind of techie Night's Watch, and I guess in the end it paid off. So the first list, we'll go with the Jon Snow list because I ran it three quarters of the time. This was literally like an experimental list. I had zero practice games with it. I just kind of theory crafted with it, and it was like, it seems to introduce some counters to like Warrior Sons with Champion of the Faith, which is a really, really, really tough unit because of their pseudo hardened. And so the Jon Snow list is Jon Snow and a unit of Ranger Hunters. This is kind of like, I don't want to say it's a no-brainer, but it just synergizes so well with Jon's free charge card and them having Swift Strike so they can always retreat after they attack. So you've got the potential to charge twice in a round for the watch. That's backed up by a unit of Sworn Brothers with Dario Naharis. Now, there's a couple of reasons I made that pick. I do have a second unit of Rangers, so I could have easily ran double Ranger Hunters, but my Sworn Brothers are painted, they're converted. I really like the work that I did with them, so I wanted to play them. And then I also think they're kind of underused in the meta right now. I think everybody's favoring the Ranger Hunters and the Crossbows at that 7-point spot. I'm just not seeing a lot of Sworn Brothers, and I think they're phenomenal. So it also has really strong synergy with Dario Naharis because his downside is if you roll ones for attack dice, you take wounds, but it's got substantial upside by bringing critical blows and precision to those Sworn Brothers. It kind of turns them back into their 1.6 Sworn Brothers, which I absolutely loved that unit, even when they went to 7 points and people thought they were unplayable. I loved 1.6 Sworn Brothers. So Dario, in a Jon list, seems like if you can get some play with For the Watch, you can charge, get the rerolls from Dario, and then you can pop the Sworn Brothers order later if you're still engaged, and you'll get those rerolls back. So you're really mitigating your chances of rolling ones there. So it seemed like a really strong synergy, so I wanted to try it. Then there were Conscripts with a Watch Recruiter. I initially had Corrin in the list, which didn't make room for the Watch Recruiter. And then there's a unit of Conscripts without a Watch Recruiter. And then on the NCU side, I did go 3 NCU, which I don't think Night's Watch has to do, but I kind of teched with the NCUs. I brought Jaor to make sure I could get For the Watch when I wanted it. I brought Tycho because particularly with Dario, you know, I'm putting a lot of, it's really my hero unit, you know. John's got a mind objective. John's really glass cannony. Dario, I'm depending on him staying alive. So Tycho is a really nice safety valve for that unit. So I've got Tycho in there for that reason. And then I brought Othel's NCU. Othel is really, really, really good. I teched this with the potential to play the mirror match in mind because I think Othel NCU constantly attacking the conscripts that are on the back line, particularly if you're going on the crown and adding vicious to his ranged attack, I just know from playing as Night's Watch and playing against Night's Watch this version, like, the easiest way to beat Night's Watch is to kill the conscript. It's not super easy to get to them all the time if you're not really, really mobile, but if you can kill them with the tactics board, like with an awful attack, or with, Melisandre, or even Cersei on the crown with Hear Me Roar, you can really start to put a dent in their life supply, and then after that, killing the Night's Watch units isn't hard, it's destroying them, if that makes sense. You can kill them easily. It's destroying them that's the problem, right? So I brought Othel to tech for other Night's Watch and also to tech for, like, poor fellows and stuff like that so that I can soften them up with an Othel attack and then charge in with something and hopefully finish them off. That list is supported by an Othel list. It's got Othel and Conscripts, of course. That's the thing, you know. Another unit of Conscripts, and then it's got one unit of Crossbowmen with the Watch Captain, a unit of Flayed Men, which is a tech piece. We'll get into that a little bit when I explain my match with Cyrus, and then Corrin Halfhand, who is also a tech piece, and then I've got Jaor again, you know, to go fish for Opal's cards, fish for Watches Ended, whatever card I'm needing. And then I've got Peter Baelish because he's got really strong synergy with those crossbowmen, grabbing the money bags, making a free attack, and forcing your opponent to have to take the swords or get popped with another free attack. So just kind of, I mean, that's, if people have seen that. That's not an uncommon build, Peter Baelish working with the Opal list. So that list felt kind of weird because there's really no healing whatsoever, no Amon, no Tycho. And as I mentioned, generally the play is Peter Baelish onto the bags to use the sword. So you're kind of relying on just those conscripts to heal you up. So normally I like to have three conscripts in a list like that, but I went with Korn Halfhand instead. But round one, I drew Chad, actually, Chad's Targaryens. It was a list he had been talking to me for a couple of weeks to, you know, kind of build some cool synergies with Targaryens. I gave him a couple of cool ideas. I told him I really like Grey Worm for issue commands, especially if you're running a dragon. You can potentially get a real easy double tap with that dragon. Bringing Daenerys the Unburnt, you can triple tap. So he went ahead and went with Grey Worm and Unsullied Pikemen, a unit of Unsullied Swordmasters, which it was definitely different to see them on the table in this type of list. He ran Rhaegal, and then he ran a unit of Stormcrow Archers, Solo Jorah, Illyrio Mopatis, and Daenerys the Unburnt. So the game started off, we pulled Game of Thrones. He parked Grey Worm right on the objective straight away. I took Offal, tried to take a shot at Jorah, didn't kill him. I waited until he activated Illyrio, of course, to take a shot with Opal. He brought the dragon up the flank, and then he sent the Swordmasters and the Stormcrow Archers up to contest Dario and Jon and force me to kind of either ignore those guys or ignore the dragon. So pretty decent positioning for him in round one. He took the cons away from just sitting on an objective because the dragon came over there, so... basically, I won't go through everything that happened, but essentially, Dario just popped off. He charged into the Unsullied Swordmasters at the end of the round, used his order to make them vulnerable. I scored 11 hits, so it was 3 wounds from precision and then 8 regular hits. And that, I ended up doing 11 wounds to the Swordmasters because they were vulnerable, put him in a pretty tough spot. From there, he went ahead and abandoned the Swordmasters, took the dragon into the conscripts, double-tapped the conscripts, blew the conscripts up. The only mistake Chad made is I think he sent the dragon into Dario a little bit too early. He didn't take advantage of some of the tempo that he had won and put me in a spot with Dario. He went kind of right into Dario. He rolled a 1 for his D3. Didn't do enough damage to Dario. I passed the panic test because of fire that burns against the cold. So Dario only took 4 wounds, which was obviously very, very easy to heal back up. But I had Take the Black in my hand, so I just stabbed that last Swordmaster, healed back to full with Take the Black, and then everything else that he did with the dragon kind of didn't matter because I had the conscripts to heal Dario back. So in that match, I think if he had just killed the second unit of conscripts and forced me to turn Dario around, it could have been a different game. You know, hindsight's 20/20. It was still a pretty close game. It was 13-7 by the end of it. Grey Worm kind of just sat on the objective, and I didn't even want to challenge him. So, next round, I actually pulled Chris Bloom, who managed to knock Craig off. Real quick, you can still hear me, right, Dave?
Yep, can still hear you. I was just having myself muted.
I'm just making sure I'm not talking to myself. Okay. So I drew Chris Bloom. The scenario was Here We Stand. He played Mother of Dragons. I did not think I had one single chance to win this match. Dragons in Here We Stand present a couple of problems. They respawn if you kill them. They respawn on any flank edge. Additionally, if he chooses to just play keep away and start playing the mission, he doesn't even really have to attack because the dragons can essentially be wherever they want to be. Daenerys is in pike, so she's worth 10 points. He can really give me some issues with that board contesting, and there's not a whole lot I can do about it. fortunately for me, unfortunately for him, in round one, I activated Tycho, I believe, and took the House of Undying just to make him discard a card. And then after that, he took the letters initially, so it left Crown, Bag, Sword, Horse open for him. And I was kind of trying to bait him into leaving the Sword and Horse open, so I started activating stuff on the field to see what he was going to do on the board. He ended up taking the Horse and the Crown, I think, and that left me the Money Bag. He either took the Money Bags or the Crown. I don't remember. But it ended up, the point being, it ended up leaving me the space to take Jaor, go get For the Watch on Dario, and with the swords open, I marched Dario up and took a charge into a dragon. He played Fire Maid Flesh, mitigated some of the damage, but I was going first the next round, so it was pretty simple to grab the swords first thing and wipe out the dragon with Dario and give me some tempo that round. Next, from there, he went into Jon Snow with the dragon, and, you know, Jon Snow and the conscripts did their thing. I was pretty fortunate to pop the dragon with Jon Snow. 8 attacks. I think I played Light That Brings the Dawn to get rerolls. Got all 8 hits. I think he made 5 saves. 5 or 4, or he may have rolled below average. I don't remember exactly. But then I retreated, and I made 7 of the 8 shots and killed that dragon. So from there, instead of him having the tempo, it really just gave me the tempo because he only was able to respawn one dragon. And then in the next round, I had so much tempo on the field that I just moved the conscripts around, did the shuffle, kind of sent Dario wherever I wanted to send Dario. And then I was able to drop my NCUs after all of his activations were done. And I just ended up taking all 4 board quarters that game. Othel, I believe, took one all by himself because he's 5 points. Don't remember exactly the details, but I know I scored 2 from the dragon, and then I scored 4 board quarters. The next round, I scored 4 board quarters, and before he could really bring his dragons back in, I still had that tempo and activation advantage, so I was able to just simply retreat Dario at the end of the round into the board quarter that he had thought that he won. And I added 8 points to it with John and an NCU. I think I had 22 in that board quarter to his, like, 17. So I secured those 2 and ended the game right there. I did not want to go another round with full dragons. So that's how that one ended. Next, I drew Dakota. This one was Fire and Blood. He was running Joffrey in Kingsguard, Red Cloaks, Flayedmen, and 2 Poor Fellows. This one was an interesting one because You Will Obey Me on Flayedmen is actually super, super, super scary. Particularly if they have a Hear Me Roar in hand, that can be a one-shot for any unit because the Flayedmen go up to 9 dice with Critical Blow and Sundering, plus they're super vicious. I ended up having in my hand, I had Shield of the Realms of Men, and I had Fire That Burns Against the Cold. So I kind of gambled. Dakota had 3 cards in his hand. I was like, there's no way he has You Will Obey Me and both counterplots to get this kill through. I was, you know, I figured I'll play Shield of the Realms of Men. He'll probably counterplot it. You know, he might do 9-10 wounds to me if he has that card. I should be able to Fire That Burns the panic test and get through this. Incidentally, he ended up rolling a 1 on the charge, which was horrible. I gave him the ability to charge Dario's flank to bait his Flayedmen in because they were his heaviest hitter. I figured with those 2 cards, I would survive the attack. His Flayedmen would be on an island with the rest of my army. I had Ghost to get into his rear, Dario to use his order and attack back. I figured I could pop them pretty quickly. But as I said, he rolled a 1. It was kind of screwed up for him because he didn't get to play You Will Obey Me. And then the real insult to injury with that is he did have both counterplots. So he could have one-shotted Dario. And at that point, I don't think the Jon Snow Hunters and 2 Conscripts and Ghost have what it takes to get back into the game against the Kingsguard and the Flayed Men. So it could have put me in a really, really, really bad spot. But he did roll that one. I guess these things can happen. It was really, really, really ill-timed for him. It's like a 16% chance on any given roll that you'll roll a 1. And, again, it happens, but it was probably the worst possible time for him to have a disorderly charge. So I did end up destroying the Flayed Men, Ghost in the rear. I flanked him with Conscripts, and then I popped him with Dario. As I recall, I think John ended up even having to come in, charge the front, and retreat to the flank and shoot them. It took a lot to bring the Flayed Men down. But after that, it was kind of downhill. For him, he lost his Flayed Men and all of his mobility plus the tempo, and it was just pretty rough after that. I ended up killing Joffrey as well and getting, I think, 4 points off of him because John was marking him with victory points. So pretty brutal ending for Dakota. And then finally, in the last round, I played Cyrus, and this was in Winds of Winter. This was the first and only game that I deployed the Opalist. The switch to Flayed Men ended up actually being pretty huge because he was running his own Flayed Men, and he was running Knights of Castle Rock, backed up by 2 guardsmen. This was in a Roost list with Tywin NCU. So going into the game, I was pretty afraid that he could pop Tywin on the crossbows, shut off ready aim fire, charge me with Knights or Flayed Men, take advantage of those tokens and the 4 free hits, and then the panic test afterwards, potentially one-shot the crossbows. So I was really, really afraid of that, but luckily I had teched with the Flayed Men, and they did exactly what I wanted them to do with Khorne's influence. They were able to move and march directly in front of my crossbows and block the Flayed Men out, so they were not able to charge me in the front. And then he ended up using Tywin to try to kill Othel. He played the mission where you get 2 additional victory points for killing the commander. Everything worked for him. Unfortunately, he got 4 wounds from Tywin off of his hits, didn't have to spend the vulnerable token. The Knights of Castle Rock came in and did 8 wounds, or 8 hits, would have killed me. I made 1 defensive save on a 6, and then he vulnerabled, and it was a 6 the second time, and then I passed the panic test. So I also survived with just 1 wound left. I did not have a Shield of the Realms of Men at the time to reroll my defensive dice, so it could have been dead Othel, and it might have been a different game. But from there, his knights ended up getting bogged down. I was able to retreat, keep him from pivoting, and then reroute my crossbows to shoot the flank of the Knights of Castle Rock. And then after that, I ended up sacrificing Khorne to freeze his Lannister guard. In killing Khorne myself, I triggered Watches Ended, and I was able to turn my crossbows around and make sure they got their full 3 shots against the Lannister guardsmen, which was enough to kill them. And then after that, Roose kind of popped off, but it was kind of just a game of survival and hold on for me. I think he essentially ran out of ways to win at that point, and he just settled for the 6-4. Instead of getting aggressive and bringing Roos into combat and risking getting tabled. So it ended at 6-4. It was a really tight game. All that Lannister supremacy is really, really scary. But I think overall, it's possible that if I had brought double crossbows, which is normally kind of standard way of running Othel, I think he could have beaten me because he had Roos's cards to shut off some of those effects that I get, and combined with counterplot and some of this other stuff, I think if he was able to one-shot one of those crossbowmen and leave me with no mobility and basically cutting my offensive power in half, he definitely could have taken the win. So,
that game. I was mentioning to Cyrus when he was talking about, you know, how it went down. I was mentioning how our game for that last tournament, it was almost identical. Me and Cyrus both went 3-0, to then face you at the last round in a mission where it used secret mission cards, and just to then lose to you, and then both lose in tiebreakers, and both get placed, even though we went to the top table, both get placed in fourth place, and both super close games. I think mine and yours was only a difference of 1 point, and then your guys is only a difference of 2 points.
Yep, pretty tight games at the top table. I think, I think for the most part, that's typically how my last games have been in Indy. I know I've fought Hurley at some of the Adepticon primers. I think I fought Hurley on top table at both Adepticon primers. I'd have to think back.
One of them, I think you faced Shane.
No, I faced Shane at Gen Con, and it was second to top
table.
Oh,
yeah.
That was a pretty close game. And then who did I – oh, I played Gruenhagen then as well with Lannisters. Who did I play? Oh, I played Chris Bloom top table because he had Starks. He just edged you out in Dark Wings, Dark Words with his Great John Over
yeah.
list. And then I played him with Tyrion top table at that event. I think that was Gen Con. Man, you're going to make me think too hard and I'm not going to remember. There hasn't been – I think for the most part in Indy, that final table where I've, played for the event has been pretty tight. Our game was decided by one. My game with Gruenhagen to get to you was also decided by one. And I think, I played Chad. I don't remember who my second opponent was, but then it was Gruenhagen
so
and then
many
you.
Games.
Oh, it's been so – there's been so many played at Indy events. I think 32, and then the four at Bob's Gamerhaven event. No, Bob's Gamerhaven event. I made a trip up there to his in-person last year.
Oh, okay. I was referring to, the actual Gen Con that you went to, before –
in
2019
Gen Con.
I had
2019, I had to cut through four Stark armies in the finals. It was Stark, more Stark. it was an Eddard list when Tywin was the only way to shut off Eddard because Roose couldn't put a panic token on the Honor Guard. It was an Eddard with a bunch of Berserkers. Then it was Ramsay with Great Axes, which was a pretty nasty combination at that time. Then it was three Direwolves. And then it was Stark Double Flayedmen, Clash of Kings. That was super fun.
I bet. So, long story short there, game is definitely getting way better than it used to be. Not that it was some horrible game before, but, I think it's heading in the right direction.
No, I think the game is phenomenal. And as I mentioned at the start of me rambling for almost an hour here, I think the meta is still young. I ended up playing Gary. He wanted to play my Jon Snow list, and I just took Othel out and put Varys in. He was kind of just getting back into the game, so we kind of made it like a demo. But in playing that game, I realized that, Varys works really, really well with Night's Watch too. Like, if in that 5-point slot, I know Othel in VU is great, but it was really nice having Varys as well, getting two heals when they claim the money bag. And that even that 3-inch shift off of the maneuver zone is really nice. I didn't even use him for the hits, which is how I normally play Varys. It was for the mobility from the horse and the extra healing. I mean, it's just great. I don't even think there was any Varys in any list. Maybe not even day one. That's probably the first time in Indy that there's been no Varus whatsoever, minus the small patch where Varus went to 5 points in 1.6. I think we had, like, one Varus. I think Justin ran him. But it was definitely weird. I think Varus is pretty underrated in 2021. I think people have come, they've warmed up to Baelish. He's pretty popular. But there's definitely still a lot of stuff that's good that's kind of unexplored, which is, for me, the most exciting thing about the update. That even goes for me as well, because I've been playing, I know I took, you know, Night's Watch this event, but most of my online games that I log are with Lannisters, and I don't even think I've scratched the surface of tinkering around with what you can do with Lannisters. I felt like Guard were good and underrated. Cyrus kind of reinforced that idea for me this weekend. So I think there's definitely some play with, like, a full Lannister Supremacy build. There's just a lot of stuff that just needs played. We just need more games. We need to try new stuff out and see how that goes.
Yep, and, you know, to expand on Varus is definitely really good. I think where you don't see him as often is really just because, he's in that 5 point range, and there's a lot of great 5 point NCUs. And it's not that he's necessarily worse than any of the other 5 pointers. He has a higher learning curve. You know, he's not as easy to use, like when to trigger those orders to get the effects of what your opponent takes. Not only that, some games your opponent might not take certain zones either on purpose. If it's on purpose, then that's obviously a strength of Varus. But if it's just incidental that they aren't taking the spots you need to use Varus for, that can be kind of sort of his downside. So I think that might be in a tournament setting. He's a little more of a risk. I don't know if risk is the right word, but, you know, you can't count on him as much as you can some of these other, like in your list, Othel. Othel's a lot more predictable for what and when you need to use him and what your results are going to kind of be, whereas Varus, arguably, you know, close to as good as Othel, he just has a higher learning curve on when to use those orders.
Yeah, I ended up taking Varus to Georgia's Three Sails League season 2 or season 3. Don't quite remember. I think it's season 2, yeah. But I ran Varus in both of my Lannister lists, and I thought he was phenomenal. If you're patient and you wait to use those order tokens, you don't get kind of greedy and use them, you know, round one, oh, I'm going to take him and get a card from the letter, or like, oh, well, they're taking the crown, I'm going to crown them back kind of situation. If you save them for later in the game, you can put your opponent in a spot as the game has gone on and as the wounds have taken their toll and things like this, they get into a spot where they almost don't even want to take the swords. You know, if you've got, like, even Night's Watch, for example, if they've got a unit of conscripts down to one or two guys because they've been healing the whole game and you just really need to get rid of them to take a shot at that elite unit, they're going to be pretty hesitant to take the swords because they don't want to take three hits on the unit of conscripts with two wounds left. Same could be said for, you know, Dothraki Screamers or really any unit that's not, you know, three up defense. They don't want to take those three hits. I ended up playing a Dragonstone Noble that was down to his last wound, and the guy I played just would not take the swords. He just didn't even want to risk the hits. You know, taking 3 2-up saves, you have, what, like a 33% chance to pull up a one? Something like that. So I think he's good. More importantly, that shift can end up being huge. There was one game in particular where I needed one more point to close out the game. My poor fellows took a maneuver, and they were, like, 2 inches away from covering the token. The maneuver zone was open, and I had a Varus token. And he had no way to engage those poor fellows, and you know, we both kind of just looked and we were like, the game's over no matter what I do. Either I claim the maneuver, you shift 3 inches, you win. I don't claim the maneuver, you take the maneuver, you move, you win. And it was, that's pretty much what it is, And that's, of course, that's a corner case. That's not always going to happen. You know, don't have everybody saying, oh, well, I'm going to run Varus because Brett promised me I'll cover up the token and win. But it's a corner case that can exist, though, you know, and it can be that 3-inch shift from Varus is huge. Like in a Dance with Dragons, you know, you can only move 2, but with Varus, you're able to shift 3, and that can be a matter of, you know, a 2-inch maneuver to get your commander away versus a 5-inch, you know, kind of retreat. It's pretty substantial. If you're running a ranged unit, that 3-inch shift in conjunction with the 2-inch shift before they shoot can mean that it's a flank shot. A 3-inch shift can get you into line of sight of something that thought it was safe. Shift 3 inches backwards, now you can see them. There's just a lot that he can do. And I know he's 5 points. I know that 5-point, you're getting into, like, very elite NCU territory. You're getting into, like, Tyrion with counterplot on a stick. You're getting into Othel's NCU. You're getting into Styre for Free Folk, you know, adding Sundering to the attack with plus, well, of course, Free Folk can't take Varus, but I'm just saying, in general, the 5-point NCUs in 2021 are very, very, very impactful. So it can be really tough to justify taking Varus instead of one of those. But I think if people give him a try and really see how flexible he is in the game itself, I'm a big believer that this meta is very much about healing. There's a reason that Tycho is in nearly every single list. It's because healing is so important. And if you save Varus, you know, even if you say you take the bags 3 turns, they take the bags 3 turns, you know, that's 6 wounds that Varus could heal you, depending on who went first. Could be 4, but even 4 from Varus is almost what Tycho does. And then you'd have 2 other order tokens to use for other stuff. I think he's big. I think people should give him a try.
Yeah, and I think that's what kind of gives Greyjoys kind of that leg up, you know, as you mentioned about healing. You know, Greyjoys have so much of it that, you can take a guy down, you know, a unit down to like 1, 2, 3 models left. You know, okay, awesome. I just basically one-shot them, and they could pull a John Snow and Vets on you and just heal the whole thing back to full between, you know, like you said, Tycho is so, so good now, and then Greyjoys just have so much healing. But to kind of round off, you know, talking about Varus, and this kind of applies to any NCU that has a token or once per game effect or just anything that isn't always going to happen all the time and you have limited number of uses, you know, just having that is a mind game to your opponent too. You know, Tywin, not having used Tywin yet, you know, it's always in the back of their mind affecting every decision they make. Every single one, as long as, you know, they're self-aware of everything that is a possibility. And that's the same thing with Varus. Using your first, second, or third token, okay, whatever. It's as soon as you use all of them that your opponent is now, it's out of their mind. They don't even care anymore. So I would say when using Varus, always try to maximize every one of them, but really try to maximize that last one, because as soon as you use it, use that last one and your Varus is out, or anyone, as soon as you use that effect, know that that mind game that your effect is playing on your opponent is always there. And the more substantial the effect, the more the mind game, you know, Tywin being, you know, probably the pinnacle of that mind game because of how crazy his effect is and how potent it is. But, you know, even something as little as, you know, a Varus token, you know, I guess what I'm getting at, unless the opportunity truly presents itself, just try not to fly through any of those effects. That even counts Tycho too. If you know you have one unit that is down, unless you're afraid the unit's about to die, you know, Tycho's that effect, you know, it's only once per game, so use it when it literally is going to change the game, in the sense that a unit that would have died is now back to fighting power, and your opponent, who thought they were going to get away with killing something, getting a point and being free to move around and not be bogged down. It's just stuff like that that really shows the power of these effects that have limited uses to them.
Yep. Yeah,
so
thank you.
So we kind of got – oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that was a good summation.
So I know we kind of got a little off topic there talking about a lot of this stuff. So we'll end out the show like I did with the other with Craig and Cyrus. So what would you say is your MVP of your between both lists, we'll say, and maybe a honorable mention MVP?
Absolutely MVP without doubt is the Dario Sworn Brothers. They did everything I imagined that they would do, and then some. That's so much damage, and that's so hard to come by in 2021 unless you really, really pay for it. Those Sworn Brothers with Dario at 8 points combined with For the Watch, it's just such a bargain. You get so much killing out of them. And even if you get charged and you start engaged, that Sworn Brothers order to get the rerolls and make them vulnerable, it's just so nasty. It's kind of hard to even choose what to do when you're playing him. You know, you want to go bog him down, but at the same time, you don't want to get hit, especially if it's a situation where you can activate, do rerolls, make them vulnerable, and then the Night's Watch player is going first the next round and can just take the swords and do it to you again. He's just so nasty. There's not many things in the game outside of luck that take two attacks like that without healing in between and they survive. There's just not much that can do it. Dragons are one-shottable. Anyways, Dario, number one MVP, Dario and Sworn Brothers. Number two, probably a close one, but I would honestly say it's Ghost. I know that, you know, Dire Wolves are a point of contention right now, but they are still really nasty. They're fast. You put a little bit of resource into them, get them into flanks and rears. They do a ton of damage. Four attack dice hitting on threes with Thundering might not seem much, but when you start taking off ranks with that attack, you're reducing attack dice normally to 5 for most units. If it's a unit that's hitting on 4s, 5 dice on 4s, they're going to have a really hard time killing that Direwolf. I think Ghost in particular has some advantages because he gets the benefit of the cards that are on John. So you can be blocking a hit with Shield of the Realms of Men. You can go up to 5 attack dice because of Sword in the Darkness. Things like this really juice up Ghost and make him a lot stronger. But he was really, really clutch just at going and intercepting things, sitting on objectives when I needed him to do that. It's still a 3-point unit. Getting you a point is pretty helpful. But, he was really clutch in going to hunt things like Stormcrow Archers. And, you know, he was a big contributor to getting rid of those flayed men that charged Dario, because I was able to get him into the rear, and that's a lot of that. I mean, it pushes the flayed men to a 6-plus defense. So Dario and then Ghost, both from the John list. That's probably because I played it more. I think in my game with Othel, the flayed men were the most important because they didn't really kill much. They didn't really do a whole lot, but he put bribery on the flayed men instead of the archers. So that was huge. And the flayed men kind of just, he put resources into them, which kept resources from being put into the crossbows. So They might even be tied with Ghost, I guess just for that reason, because the mobility, the body blocking, and how scary they are, he put resources into them and left the crossbows basically unhindered.
Awesome. And so as we kind of close out and finish up here, the last thing I wanted to ask, so what would you say is like the number one highlight of the weekend? Just anything in general. It could be the, you know, the tournament within it or outside of the tournament.
Getting definitely getting Robert to give me a high five. getting Robert Fulkerson to give me a high five.
I wasn't expecting that, but I definitely that's going to be on my bucket list now. It sounds like. Is there like an inside joke for that or?
No. Well, I mean, it was funny, but he had been kind of he'd been kind of wandering around and watching the games happen and seeing what was going on. Well, Robert actually knows a little bit about the game, you know, of course. He knows rules. He knows how the game works. So he came over to Dakota and I's table right as I used Othel on the money bags to shoot Dakota's red cloaks. I ended up doing 3 wounds to them, and then they failed their panic test and took 3 more. So as he walks by, he sees 6 red cloaks getting removed, and he was like, "Whoa, what just happened?" I was like, "I got him." And he kind of looked at the tactics board. The money bag was, you know, the swords were still open. And he's like, "What did you shoot him with?" I was like, "I shot him with Othel." He was like, "You don't have any archers or anything. Where did that shot come from?" I was like, "Yeah, Othel, I guess he shot him from the wall somewhere. I don't know, but I shot the crap out of these red cloaks." And he was like, "Oh, my God."
Could you imagine then, just
no,
Othel, like, in a tree?
Yeah.
With
no,
a bow and arrow?
I think more accurately to describe it was he came over and saw the attack do the 3 wounds. Then he asked where the shot came from. Then Dakota crit failed the panic test and took 3 more, and that was when the high five happened. Yeah! Robert was super cool the whole event.
You now have to model your Othel, like, in a tree with a bow and arrow.
I think I can arrange this. I think I can arrange it. Maybe I could put like a bazooka on him or something too.
Yeah. something, you know, just that way it doesn't seem, you know, so odd.
Yep. I've got to do something ridiculous for just the Othel NCU model. I have another Othel, so I can do that just for the NCU.
All right. So we're down to the wire here. We've only got a couple of minutes left. I want to thank you for coming on, Brett, you know, and kind of giving us the insight to, you know, your Night's Watch list and, you know, taking first place at the Nationals, going 4-0. I can't remember the last time, if ever, you have lost a game in person at an actual event. and the streak just keeps going. I think you're like 40-0 now, and people think I'm exaggerating on that number, but that's actually pretty close to what the number is. But with that said, thank you all for listening in. I know this was definitely a bit longer one, longer than we expected it would be, but there is just so much to kind of talk about and to expand upon. You know, it's our first show that wasn't covering, you know, something new that was revealed and speculation and kind of like our thoughts on it, you know, so it was a nice change up there. And, you know, the next show should be something similar. So hopefully we'll be able to get back on track with that, because I know everyone's been kind of itching for more content like that, and I know I have. Again, thank you all for listening in. This is the Small Council Radio, and it is dismissed.